You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Today's show is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. I'm going to be talking a little bit about Bam Adebayo, who's still not within the Orlando bubble, the attitudes from the players from around the Orlando restart, the possibility of a formation of a super team from within Orlando, and of course the latest updates on the upcoming Miami Heat scrimmage versus the Sacramento Kings. But I'll start off with a little something about Jimmy Butler. As you may or may not know, players have been given the opportunity to wear a special pre-approved message on the back of their jerseys. There were a couple of selections that were, again, provided by the league. I'm not sure if they consulted the Players Association. That's my understanding, is that they did, that they had some input from some players, possibly Chris Paul as president, as the players' representative for the Players Association, along with Michelle Roberts, the president of that Players Association. But in any case, some of those messages were pretty simple. Black Lives Matter, vote, education, things of that sort. They were kind of benign to me. And I've talked about this on the national show, Locked On NBA, which, of course, is always available for download and to listen to. I didn't think it necessarily impacted Miami particularly, although players have been asked by most media members via Zoom conference calls about what messages they were wearing. We got a finalized list. Jimmy Butler was doing something a little different. He was going to keep his jersey blank. He didn't want his name on there. And again, the reason why I say that the choices provided by the league were somewhat benign is because I don't know how effective putting a message on there is anyway. I think there were questions about its efficiency, whether or not it was going to be making any kind of a statement. And without the freedom to really say what players wanted to, whether it was something much more, I don't know, controversial, an insult to police or saying, you know, end police brutality. That could have been something that I think wasn't necessarily particularly controversial, but the league didn't allow that. They didn't even include that in their potential list of selections. Jimmy wanted to do something a little different by not having a name out there at all. And I think his reasoning, which he provided in a Zoom conference call last week and was very well thought out, and I think really showed a thoughtfulness and a purpose to his decision-making process, was that there have been so many black men and women who have been killed as a result of systemic racism and police brutality that their names are so often forgotten. And I think that by removing his name from the jersey, it's, I think, a way of opening up the conversation to consider those people, to remember them as more than just a name, as people who have been killed and whose lives ended needlessly and prematurely. And I think it's a powerful statement, to be honest with you. I think it's a pretty stark contrast to any kind of, you know, you're watching a game, and I think I speak for a lot of people watching games. Even I, knowing these players' faces and mannerisms and how they move and what they look like, and you still see their jersey numbers and things of that sort, you kind of disregard the white letters on the back of those jerseys. I think seeing something blank like that will stand out a little bit more. Maybe I'm wrong. Possibly all of this is pointless anyway. Or not, if not pointless, maybe not necessarily as impactful as people want to make it seem. There are a lot of issues impacting the league, blacks in general in the United States and across the world, and humanity in general. And so any message in the right way, I think, is a positive thing. And so I can't disparage it outright, even if I think it might not necessarily be, again, as impactful as the league is trying to make it seem. Part of the league's process here, and if anybody watched the arena on TNT on Monday night, you'll probably have a little bit of an understanding of what I'm saying, is that the league is trying very hard to show themselves as being much more human. They're not just a global corporation, which in fact they are. They're comprised of human beings, which also in fact they are. But they're trying to show that there's this humanity, that there's this deep understanding and care about the issues at large. And while that may be the case, that's not to say that they don't also care about how much money that they're making. And that pre-polished television show on Monday night on TNT was a big extension of the league saying, again, in my opinion, that oh, look at us. We do care. We do want to say something. We do want to make a statement. And we do care about these larger issues. I don't, it's not that I don't buy it necessarily. I don't always think that it's being 100% forthright and forthcoming. And so I think there's an issue with that. And I think the pre-approved messages on jerseys was just another step in the right direction, but a small one, a too small step. It could have been, they can use this platform. One of the things that we've heard frequently is that the league is using the Orlando Restart as a platform, as an opportunity to further discuss these issues. And while players have mentioned it, by and large, via Zoom conference calls, I mean, even white players like J.J. Redick have been very outspoken. Greg Popovich has been very outspoken. Tobias Harris ended his Zoom conference call on Monday afternoon very abruptly by saying, look, there's only one statement I'm going to make, and that's that the killers of Breonna Taylor need to be brought to justice for their actions. And I think that's powerful. It resonates. But at the same time, you kind of see it on Twitter. You kind of hear about it, and then it's kind of overlooked and glossed over. Either way, Jimmy's actions were just another step, another positive motion in his opinion anyway, as far as trying to bring recognition to those lives that have been lost as a result of racism and police brutality. And the league seems to disagree. The most recent thing is that Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press reported that the league has denied Jimmy's request for a blank nameplate. On Monday's late-night Zoom conference call with reporters, Jimmy clarified that he still thinks it's, quote, to be determined. He is still optimistic that the league will relent and allow him to go with a blank name on the back of his jersey. He does not have a plan B. I don't know what he'll do in that case. Maybe he'll shift to one of the pre-approved messages. Maybe he'll just use his name, something that LeBron James is doing. LeBron has been, and I think most of you know this, a very outspoken critic of police brutality and racism, and he has been for years, even before the Orlando Restart. He's elected to simply wear his name there because I guess maybe it's his own form of protest about the benign pre-approved messages. I haven't seen the clarification from Bron on any of his Zoom calls. Those have been a little bit trickier. Not that I don't have access to them, but they've just been, I just don't necessarily care about what he has to say via those calls because those questions are so, they lack spontaneity. They just kind of, his responses have been a little canned for my taste. But it's, the overall point is that as far as Jimmy is concerned, he still has to wait to see whether or not the league changes their mind a little bit and allows him to do so. Maybe they're waiting till the last moment and kind of saying, all right, we'll let you have this opportunity. And other players have asked for the same right too. But now with the scrimmage against the Sacramento Kings just less than a day away, there's the opportunity there. I think the league is recognizing that this is the 11th hour. They have to make a decision quickly. And maybe they're just waiting to kind of slip in the news that they're letting Jimmy do this kind of under the radar a little bit so that maybe doesn't appear to be too controversial or anything like that. I'm not sure what their rationale is. I don't know why Jimmy suspects that the league is still considering it. Maybe he's having team officials request it on his behalf. I don't know. There's been no clarification. I don't know that it necessarily needs that deep a look into it, but it's just the latest goings on regarding Jimmy Butler and the league and everything else. As far as the team is concerned, players have been happy. They've been working very hard. They've been very competitive. I'll get into a little bit more about the attitudes of the players from what I've learned via these Zoom conference calls in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Now, I did want to tell you a little bit about rockauto.com. I've been telling you about it before over the last couple of months, but I just think it's such a great way for people to be saving money, something that I think all of us could use, particularly as this global pandemic impacts the global economy on such a large scale. The opportunity to save little bucks here and there, to use that money for your rent, for your mortgage, for your car payment, whatever you might need, it's such a great opportunity and you have to take advantage of it. And that's why I'm telling you about rockauto.com. They've been in the business for 20 years. Before we even knew what the internet was or we were using it as heavily as we do now, rockauto.com already had a website giving you the kind of great service and the auto parts that you need to fix your car. It's a real simple website, really easy to use. You list your car, your make, model, you find all the parts that you might need. They break them down into different sections. You order it within days. You have that product shipped to you. And then if you are a do-it-yourselfer, It's easy to install and make the changes there. You save yourself hundreds of dollars rather than going to an auto parts store or having to go to somebody who's going to fix your car or a body shop or anything like that. It's just a great way, again, of saving money. And so I think their catalog is so easy to navigate, and you see all the parts available. Why do you have to go to an auto parts store, especially now when we're trying to stay at home, when we're not sure who's wearing masks and who is? Go on your computer at home, order the parts you need, make those changes, save hundreds of bucks. It's such a great opportunity. You absolutely need to take advantage of it. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. And when you see this section that says, how did you hear about us? Just write Locked On to let them know that we sent you there. It's an amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts for your car that you'll ever need. RockAuto.com. We'll talk a little bit about Bam Adebayo and the possibility of forming a super team in the next segment. But right now, I just kind of wanted to touch on some of the latest discussions via those Zoom calls. I think you've probably seen by this point some of the footage there. I've been trying to tweet some out as far as practice footage and things of that sort. The Zoom calls themselves are like any Zoom call. There's a pre-setup area there for players to sit down, players and Eric Spoelstra to sit down. The Zoom call starts, and then media submits questions. And this is not just local media. It's national media, guys from ESPN and others. And so it's been pretty interesting to see all these people kind of submit questions and what they're all interested in. You know, obviously there's, I've made the conscious decision, and I'm going to explain this on the podcast. I was doing this via the Zoom calls, that as soon as something breaks or as soon as a player says something, that I would tweet it out. Jimmy Butler says this, or Goran Dragic says this. And just for your edification, I'm not going to do that, because Sam Amick of The Athletic kind of explained this, and I feel like it pertains to me and others around the media, is that we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot by posting these tweets about what's being said in the Zoom calls, and then that's an instant story that people will gravitate towards. And instead of us being able to go into it deeper via an actual written piece for a newspaper or publication or anything like that, people don't care about that anymore, because now all of a sudden they got the information they needed out of 140 characters on Twitter. With media resources being as limited as they are, we can't do that to ourselves. And so, just so you know, I'm not going to be putting it out there. Look, Ira Winderman and Ethan Skolnick and Barry Jackson and everybody else might tweet these things out. I've just made the decision not to. I'm not knocking them. They do what they do so that they can generate interest and clicks and things of that sort. I understand that's the nature of the game, but I'm not going to create a situation where I am, again, limiting the possibility of people going up to The Athletic or The Herald or any other publication to read a full developed story because, well, we already found out about it via Twitter anyway, so there's no need to. That's a whole other story. Again, that's something that is a personal decision of mine, more a kind of a indication of where this platform is in general. I think Twitter is a powerful tool to break things and to inform people and keep them involved. But I think doing so during these conference calls probably hurts us as media members more than it helps us. And so I'm just making the decision not to. Regardless, the calls have been very interesting. Again, players sit there. It's been typically Eric Spoelstra plus two players. Those two players are kind of on a rotation there. Myers Leonard's done it a couple times. Duncan's done it a couple times. Jay Crowder's done it once. And Jimmy's done it a couple times. Goran has as well. And they got to ask questions. They answer them as honestly as possible. They don't see the media reporters. They just kind of speak into a screen. And it's worked out very well. So you can get a lot of information from these players about what's happening. As far as the players themselves, by and large, they have been so positive about what's happening in the Orlando bubble. I think it's been really, really heartening to see how players have responded, particularly in Miami. I think it really shows the dedication of this team, that they have not complained about the food, about the resources, about the accommodations, about anything. They've gone about their business as well as can be expected, and they are very, very encouraged by the level of play here, even without Kendrick Nunn and Bam Adebayo yet to report to the Orlando bubble. The other players that are there, all 15 players of the 17-man roster, have been very, very competitive, have been very active. Eric Spoelstra has mentioned a number of times that the team is, I think, a little bit, have progressed a little bit beyond what his expectations were. He has to learn how to temper those. They still have somewhat long practices, but they're balancing film work with just basic drills, kind of just trying to get back to the point where they were. A big concern moving forward, aside from the psychological impact of being in the bubble that I've mentioned, is the whole fatigue factor. You're going to have players go through this weird process because, you know, the season ended abruptly in March. They're restarting it 4 months later. It's going to be strange. Now, that might be the normal timeline for a team that has gone to the finals and then starts training camp later that September. But it's still a little odd because it's not like these players had access to courts or gyms where they can continue to do the same level of work that they had or would normally do without the pandemic being a factor. And so I have concerns about the level of play. I think it's going to be spotty at first. I think it might be spotty during the 8 regular season seeding games. I think the reality is that we're going to see some inconsistent level of play as players are still trying to get their legs from under them. I've tried to get back into the kind of comfort zone that builds over time. We look at Miami's roster. In a way, I think the restart might have helped them because it allows for players to kind of fit alongside the new acquisitions like Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill to some extent a little bit more seamlessly because, well, you're all kind of starting off from scratch. And that's something that Spo has mentioned pretty often, is that whenever asked about whether or not he thinks there's a disadvantage there or if there's something he's struggling with, he says, yes, but we're all going through that. And I think that's the reality, is that no team has a greater advantage in that sense. You know, maybe Milwaukee might have more talent. Maybe the Lakers have more talent. But you look at where they are in terms of restarting and things of that sort, they all have to go through it. The Lakers are missing players. The Heat are missing players. Every team is missing players because of either a positive test or an injury or something to that extent. So the attitudes have been great around the team. Very, very positive. You've seen guys kind of bond with each other. I think it's a really interesting event taking place here from a sociological perspective. It's you know, again, it seems a little bit removed. Something I mentioned on my most recent podcast with Ben Colliver is that it feels a little dehumanizing to say, well, this is just an interesting prospect and an interesting process, but it really is. Like, just the idea of players being contained here in context of what we know about the NBA, this has never happened before. And it's just fascinating to see guys bonding over fishing or music or dinner or whatever they're doing, and kind of just new friendships form. And it's been really, really interesting. And I think it's going to be, I'm curious to see how it all plays out on the court as well as what we've seen off the court over the last couple of weeks. Anyway, I also want to talk a little bit about Bam Adebayo, who recently celebrated his birthday. I saw via Twitter somebody mentioned that Bam Adebayo is one of the most overrated players in the NBA, and I wanted to bring it up. I don't know why. That's not quite clear. I do know why. People want to see scoring. I think more people would gravitate towards a potent scorer, like, not a knock on him, but a Jamal Crawford or a Carmelo Anthony, that is somewhat one-dimensional and only provides scoring, or at least did at their peak of their respective careers. They're more willing to give the recognition to those players as all-stars or future Hall of Famers and things of that sort than they are for a well-developed all-around player. I don't think that cultural shift has permeated outside of basketball as much as we want to think of it inside basketball. Inside this basketball bubble, and I think for most fans that are very, very knowledgeable, and of course for most media members, not all, some of the old school media members still gravitate more towards those scoring first type mentalities. I think you look at a player like Bam, who's so well-rounded, who does so much so well, and while he may not have the kind of gaudy production of a Carmelo Anthony, for example, he just impacts winning at such a high level. And I think not everybody recognizes that. It's easier to say, well, this guy scores 25 points per game, he obviously makes an impact. But if he gives up 27 points per game, looking at you, Michael Beasley, then it doesn't really matter how well you score. I just felt it was important to kind of point that out, because I just can't believe that you look at a Heat game, and perhaps the person who tweeted this has not seen a Heat game, but you look at a Heat game and you see everything that Bam does, from bringing the ball up, from pulling down rebounds, from blocking or altering shots at the rim, for creating shots for others and for himself. Maybe he's not putting up a whole hell of a lot of points, and maybe he doesn't stretch the floor as well as he could or should, But right now, he's hugely impactful, and I think that's why he's got the recognition he does as an all-star. I don't think it's ill-deserved, and I think he's certainly not overrated. I don't think he's underrated yet. I think he's at the right point where people are starting to recognize what a hugely impactful player he is. In any case, I'll talk a little bit more about the possibility of a super team forming in Orlando and what's going on with the latest NBA scrimmage. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So, Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, who's been pretty, he's been well seen. I think he's done a great job of being a voice for media and for fans within the Orlando bubble. He wrote a piece for Yahoo Sports that the next NBA super team would likely form as in Orlando. And I think that's, at first I wasn't sure if that was the case. I didn't think that players would kind of be allowed to fraternize with each other the way they have. And I think it's for the better. I think, you know, one of the things that my biggest concerns with the league restarting in Orlando was the view that maybe the players are not entitled to their humanity to being able to just simply not participate in the bubble. Look, I know they were given the opportunity to opt out, but they're also risking loss of money, loss of connections to their family and friends and things of that sort because they're largely defined by basketball. And so I just seeing them interact with each other, drinking beers, like Myers Leonard challenging Jordan Clarkson, two guys who have never play together, and now they're fast friends because they can both drink beer quickly. These kinds of things to me are somewhat hilarious. And so when you look at how super teams are formed, whether it's about establishing legacies like it was in 2010 for LeBron and Chris Bosh, whether it's for cementing it like it was for Dwayne Wade, whether you just want to play with people that you like, you know, look at DeAndre Jordan. He's getting paid a whole heck of a lot of money in Brooklyn, mostly because he's very good friends with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And I don't have a problem with that. Maybe as a Nets fan, you might. But I think from a fan of people gravitating towards each other and wanting to be together in a teamwork environment, I think that's a huge plus. I think we don't see enough of that fraternizing and things of that sort. And for the Orlando bubble, I think you're going to see a lot of players start to kind of build on this. And one of the things that I have not talked about since it was reported Sunday night is that Goran Dragic mentioned on his second Zoom conference call that the Players Lounge, and if you haven't seen it, first of all, I'm not sure how you haven't, but it's the Heat Twitter team has shown a lot of it, as have other players. Their player lounges have been converted to basically an area for players to sit around, play dominoes, cards, watch video, talk, just hang out. And the Heat has done a phenomenal job of converting this lounge into a very comfortable space. Eric Spoelstra and players, by and large, have all said that this is the place where they hang out the most when they're not on the court. They can go around campus. They can walk. They can go have dinner at the one sports bar, Rick's Sports Bar, I think it's called, that's available to players right now. There are other options as far as dining that are going to be available or have become slowly available to players. But for now, they're not a whole heck of a lot of options. Either way, the Players Lounge has been the place where players just want to stay. They want to lounge and hang out. And the Heat did a really, really nice job of decorating it with photos of players, their family members, like pictures of Myers Leonard with Ellie Leonard and his dog Coco. Those are the kinds of things that remind you of what you're playing for. And everybody has mentioned this. Goran Dragic, I think, said something that really resonated with me anyway. Is when somebody asks at the first, I think within the first day or two of being in the Orlando bubble, you know, what was the weirdest thing that he brought with him? And he said, you know, I didn't bring anything with me. I brought my tablet and my phone. As long as I can FaceTime or Zoom with my, you know, with my kids and my wife, that's all that matters to me. And I think it shows a lot of what players are missing here. It's like, you know, yeah, you can bring your recording studio like Dame or Lou Williams, or you can bring your Xbox or your gaming station and things of that sort. But for some players, they need to connect with family that they're missing very badly. LeBron James, who sets the tone for players around the league, said he hasn't spoken to his mother. He hasn't seen his mother in person for a long time, the longest he's ever spent without talking to her. And so that hurts. And I think for a lot of guys to be able to walk into that lounge and say, look, this is my wife, this is my girlfriend, this is my family, my daughter, my son, It just, it really helps. And as far as the potential formation of a super team, Goran also mentioned that players have been walking by the Heat Players Lounge and have all commented on what a well-done job they did of decorating this, that it's a really nice humanizing touch. You know, we all kind of see that right away, and our first thought is, damn, they're recruiting already. And that's, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think their thought process was first and foremost to help the players kind of focus on, you know, bigger things outside of the bubble, to kind of refresh and kind of just renew a connection to the outside world. At the same time, I think that means a lot to players around the league, is that they were willing to do that. I know other teams have done some things maybe a little differently, not quite as similarly, but I think it's really worked to show that Miami is one of those organizations that really looks out for their players' best interest. You know, you can question it, you can break it down in many, many different ways, but I think that kind of resonates for players. Look, it's not going to be the first thing that leads a player to sign in Miami. I think it helps. As Eric Spoelstra has said dozens of times, we're not for everybody. The Heat are not for everybody. You still have to be willing to do an insane level of work to be dedicated to basketball beyond anything else, in a way that some players just aren't interested in doing. But this really helps. And as far as the formation of a super team is concerned, I think you are going to see players, again, start to kind of form relationships, friendships that are going to be lifelong connections. And if that means that they're going to be playing in the bubble together, if they're going to be playing, for a team together in a little while, I'm sure it's going to manifest in some way. We'll all hear about these friendships that have formed here. In a way, it's almost why I feel like I wish Bam had been here, particularly for these first few weeks, because he is so well-liked around the league as one of the young players that, you know, has a connection with a lot of players. He's a young all-star. He would probably be our best recruiter in many ways, although I think certainly Jimmy has connections via his all-star status and his veteran leadership. So I think that's a huge thing. And once Bam gets there and he's able to connect, I think it's going to be a huge factor in Miami's favor. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out, but I'm curious to see what happens here. I also wanted to mention the upcoming Heat scrimmage that's going to be taking place on Wednesday the 22nd versus the Sacramento Kings. Those are going to be televised. I wouldn't expect much out of it. Eric Spoelstra has been pretty adamant that the scrimmage is just an opportunity to play against another team. You kind of get into the same rut playing against the same players, your teammates, after a while. It's important to kind of change that up and just kind of break out of that. The Kings are beaten up. They're missing several players during the positive COVID-19 tests. They've had injuries to Marvin Bagley and others. And so it's not exactly a really deep group there. It's not about winning or losing, although it'll be fun to kind of see it. It's going to be choppy, let's be honest. It's also for a test for Eric Spoelstra to see who's available, who's healthy, who's out there. Bam's not going to be there even if he does report by then. Kendrick's not going to be out there even if he reports by then. They still have to continue to do work, etc. So they're probably under quarantine even as we speak. More to the point, though, as far as what to look for in the scrimmage, just who seems a little bit more fluid, who seems a little bit more bouncy. If Tyler Hero's bounced back from injury, if Myers is able to be as impactful as he was prior to his injury, how the new guys have kind of figured out how to blend in with Jimmy Butler, because they really haven't played together all that much. So these are the kinds of things that I think are important to look out for in the scrimmage. And I wouldn't take too much out of the rotations or who plays or who doesn't. My feeling is that Spo, and I think he said this, is that he's going to play everybody who's available. So we're going to see a pretty deep bench as far as the scrimmage is concerned. And it should be interesting. It'll be the first opportunity to really watch basketball, or anything that looks like basketball, for a long time. So I think we'll all be appreciative of it. I'll be recording a show after that show, after the scrimmage ends, of course. Coming up later this week, I'll also be talking to Dave DeFore of The Athletic, getting his thoughts on the Orlando bubble and Miami's chances at a title. And again, I'll be continuing to report on the latest news from within the Orlando bubble. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app, so you'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm Dave Ramil signing off, and thank you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, Dave.